Hi, and thanks for joining me for Stories from the Phoenix New Times. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer, Chip Hawbrock. First on this week's program, the 10 most read news stories of 2025. ICE raids, misconduct, and porn. The story was written by Zach Buchanan and was posted on the Phoenix New Times website on December 30th. Man, 2025 was a sum of a bitch, wasn't it? We wouldn't blame you if you wanted to throw this year in the trash. It was the year of ICE raids and Donald Trump's single-minded and haphazard plan to aggrandize himself at the expense of regular people. It was a year when things got more expensive, tariffs, and when life seemed to get a little or a lot worse. Frankly, we should just hit the skids on advancing fully into 2026 until we can figure out what the hell is going on. Time does not work that way, alas, so next year beckons. But before we get there, we wanted to highlight the stories that really resonated with you, the readers of Phoenix New Times. Prepare a strong drink. Some of these stories might anger you. Some, we hope, made you smile. Which ones do might say a lot about you. Here are our most read news stories of 2025. Number 10, ICE raids hit Valley businesses and neighborhoods. Because the state went for him in 2024, Trump hasn't treated Arizona like he has Los Angeles, Chicago, and North Carolina, and other Democratic-run states and cities that have felt the brunt of the president's brutal immigration crackdown. But that doesn't mean the Valley has been spared immigration and customs enforcement raids. In June, New Times reported on rumors of raids in the Valley that quickly proved to be true, and our reporters crisscrossed the Phoenix area to follow ICE caravans in real time. Number 9, the big takeover. The secret plans to give Trump command of America's police. Earlier this year, New Times received a grant to fund watchdog reporting on the state and the border. The first piece we produced with that grant was quite the scoop. Reporter Bo Hodai uncovered previously unreported planning documents from a subgroup of the infamous Project 2025 effort to reshape the country in Trump's image. The documents, created by the Border Security Work Group, a collective filled with Trump-adjacent law enforcement leaders, military veterans, national security types, and more, laid out a drastic restructuring of American policing to place it firmly under the president's thumb. The story proved prophetic, as a lot of those plans have since come to pass. Keep an eye out in 2026. There will be more to report from these documents. Number 8. Arizona ranked worst state in U.S. for starting a family. This one touched a nerve among our readers. A study from Ivy Surrogacy found that Arizona is dead last among the 50 states when it comes to the best place to raise a family. According to a host of economic and education data, the rate of uninsured children, worst, vehicle fatalities per 1 million miles, third worst, and high school graduation, third worst. Arizona does a poor job of teaching its kids and keeping them healthy. The story generated a ton of opinions on our social media channels, with some bemoaning Arizona's laggard status and others defending the honor of the Grand Canyon state. We love it here too, but we'd be lying if we said this state couldn't do a lot more to help kids and families. Number 7, QAnon shaman says he's rightful president, sues Trump for $40 trillion. Jacob Chansley, also known as the QAnon shaman, has had quite the character arc over the last few years. In 2021, he stormed the Capitol on January 6th, an act that won him media coverage, thanks to his headdress and face paint, and a prison sentence. When Trump reassumed office, he pardoned Chansley along with a host of other January 6th insurrectionists, leading Chansley to celebrate and say on social media that he'd now go buy some guns. Not long after, though, Chansley turned on Trump. The president had balked at releasing the Epstein files, the cause that had animated so many who stormed the Capitol on his behalf. Chansley cursed Trump's name and, in September, sued him in a self-authored rambling complaint that made a series of bizarre claims. The suit is destined to fail, but it offers a unique look into the mind of the conspiracy-brained types that Trump was all too happy to use to his advantage. Number 6. Women shouldn't hold office, says GOP woman now running for office. If you or Alanis Morissette are curious about the proper definition of irony, this headline is a perfect example. In 2024, one of the daughters of GOP Representative Andy Biggs popped off on a little-known podcast, everyone has one after all, about how she wouldn't vote for women and that women should be in the home and not public office. A year later, that daughter, Miley Biggs, decided to run for state senate. New Times was the first to report the comments, boiling it down in the above tagline that had many on social media saying, "Amazingly, this is not from The Onion." Nope, it's real life. Number 5. Here's how much more expensive Phoenix has become since 2020. It started more than 5 years ago, but in many ways, we're still feeling the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. That was evident from this story on a study that found inflation outpaced wage growth in Phoenix from December 2020 to December 2024, leading to real wages effectively declining by 3%. This struck a chord with many readers who have felt the effects of the affordability crisis without really being able to put a thumb on what exactly was happening. That unaffordability helped Trump win Arizona and regain office, though we'd bet dollars to donuts that his tariffs have made and will continue to make the problem worse since this study came out. Number 4. Pornhub has cut off Arizona over a new law. There's a way around it. Arizona, you absolute horn dogs. This fall, a new state law took effect requiring adult websites to verify someone's identity before granting them access. Essentially, you need to show ID or present a credit card to watch porn. Major sites like Pornhub balked at this, cutting off Arizona-based IP addresses rather than be forced to collect sensitive information from users. New Times was here to help, though, offering up this handy guide to how to evade those restrictions by using a virtual private network, or VPN. That story has been clicked on more than 68,000 times. We're happy to have been of service. Number 3. Top Arizona Attorney General official arrested by postal inspectors. This bizarre saga, which is still unfolding in the courts, was first reported by New Times. In November, a top attorney under Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays was arrested by U.S. postal inspectors for allegedly opening and reselling mail that had been misdelivered to her home. The attorney, Vanessa Hickman, resigned ahead of her arrest, and the AG's office released a statement that was less than supportive. Hickman is now facing felony charges, and her case might not be resolved until next year. Number 2. Arizona homeowners are delisting properties en masse as market shifts. Is the housing market finally softening? Maybe. In September, we reported that Phoenix led the nation in the rate of homes being delisted, suggesting a shift in a housing market that had been exploding during the pandemic. Suddenly unable to find buyers to meet their sky-high prices, sellers decided to take their houses off the market and stand pat. Another study showed that Phoenix ranked highly in price cuts on available homes. Is it a buyer's paradise now? Have we solved the housing crisis? Far from it, but it ain't as bad as it used to be. And number 1, Turning Point leader pleads guilty to attempted election fraud. We love Schadenfreude, don't we? This year, former state lawmaker and Turning Point leader Austin Smith provided plenty of it. Last year, Smith abruptly dropped his re-election bid amid allegations that he forged signatures on his petition to secure a spot on the ballot. This year, Smith was formally charged for doing so by the Attorney General's office, resulting in a plea deal. The news of that plea, guilty for the record, from a guy who spouted his share of election fraud conspiracy theories, took on a life of its own, with this story finding a wide readership outside Arizona. For that, we must thank the Arizona Mirror, the nonprofit newsroom that reported it and wrote it. They do great work, and we're happy to have the occasion to boost the reach of their reporting. Next, a story written by Zach Buchanan and posted on December 29th. The 10 wildest news stories of 2025, poop, Nazis, and QAnon shaman. Arizona, you're a mess, but that's why we love you. Maybe other places in the country make for idyllic places to live where every news story is good and nothing bizarre ever happens. That's not the Grand Canyon state, though. With our mix of sane and crazy, far right-wing and dyed blue progressive, we have tension. Millions of people raise perfectly normal families here, but we're also a playground for the filthy rich and the politically batshit insane. At its worst, that mix gives us abortion bans, election conspiracy theories, and other societal woes. At the same time, just often enough to make you chuckle, we get some truly weird stories that seem like they were meant to happen here. The stories listed below fit that bill. As we wave goodbye to 2025, here's a trip down WTF Lane with the 10 wildest news stories Phoenix New Times covered this year. Fred Flintstone berates the Tempe City Council. Tune in to a city council meeting and odds are you'll see something weird. At least when Jack Maverick spoke to the Tempe City Council in January, he was trying to be weird on purpose. Inspired by recordings that revealed city council members laughing at the description of certain residents as cave people, that stands for Citizens Against Virtually Everything, Maverick donned a Fred Flintstone getup to dress down the council during his 3 minutes of allotted public comment. "I'm just a humble caveman," Maverick stated to the council, referencing a famous SNL sketch about a thawed-out caveman who became a corporate lawyer. "I've never been a clown. I've never even gone to clown college like the rest of you. So if I get things wrong, I apologize." Maverick then hit the council over the ongoing rezoning saga with Danielle Plaza and over the council's concerted effort to criminally cite people who feed the unhoused in city parks. For the performance, New Times christened Maverick the best yabba-dabba dude. Comedy show at Mesa Brewery draws neo-Nazis. In late January, the popular Mesa Brewery 12 West found itself issuing an extraordinary apology. A comedy show hosted in the brewery's basement event space, featuring comic Quinn Dale and opener Leonardo Joni, the latter of whom regularly makes racist jokes on social media, had drawn neo-Nazi pamphleteers outside the show. Inside, brewery staff cringed as Joni cracked jokes about being attracted to old-school Nazis. In a statement at the time, 12 West claimed it had not done enough research into the acts. The views of the performers do not reflect the views of 12 West Brewing, and in no way do we support the presence of any sort of neo-Nazi groups around our business, 12 West's statement read. Once alerted that there were people outside handing out materials and harassing guests, we immediately closed the gates and denied any entrance into the building. "We absolutely do not support neo-Nazis, hate speech, white supremacy, misogyny, anti-LGBTQ+, or racism of any kind. The Jessica Bueno Saga. It started off as a coffee story. Randall Denton, the founder of the popular cafe Xanadu Coffee, had been busted in an underage sex sting, ultimately pleading guilty. The coffee shop closed, and the story could have ended there. But new times kept digging, and what we found took on a life of its own. After his 2024 arrest, Denton had been bailed out by his friend and former business partner, Jessica Bueno. Who's that? Well, at the time, she was the president of the Phoenix Union Elementary School District No. 1. The revelation that a woman responsible for the education of thousands of young Phoenix children had sprung an accused and later convicted sex offender enraged many parents, who called on Bueno to resign. She ducked the first school board meeting after New Times report. She ultimately tendered her resignation, but not before receiving a tongue-lashing from Arizona Secretary of State and Phoenix parent Adrian Fontes during public comment. Phoenix golfer sues his club over a tee time. The Valley is a golf mecca, so it only makes sense that we generate a lot of golf lawsuits as well. Here's hoping most of them are a bit more weighty than the one Phoenix golfer Brad Gaster filed in March, though. Gaster was a member of Anthem Golf and Country Club in North Phoenix, but he wasn't a happy member. Despite paying $47,000 up front and at least $1,300 a month for his full golf membership, Gaster had problems securing a tee time. After receiving his preferred time only 9 times over an unspecified period, Gaster requested a refund of his membership fee. When he was denied, he sued. The lawsuit was short-lived. After New Times contacted Gaster for comment, a motion for dismissal appeared in the court docket. Someone mails poop to the county attorney. In April, New Times was the first to report a prank an unidentified person had made on Maricopa County Attorney Rachel Mitchell 2 months earlier. Apparently using the site poopsenders.com, the prankster shipped a package supposedly containing animal dung, its actual poopiness is unclear, to Mitchell's home. Instead of rolling her eyes and tossing it in the trash, the Republican prosecutor called Phoenix police. Mitchell fingered a few possibilities for the cops: animal rights activists, pro-Palestine protesters, and terminally online suspended attorney Vladimir Gajic, who'd feuded with Mitchell's significant other online. Gajic, in particular, denied any involvement, and the smelly mystery figures to remain unsolved. Police helicopter spells out Alex during a flight. What's that buzzing overhead, and does it know how to spell? If you were in West Phoenix one night in July, the answers were a Phoenix police helicopter and yes. It's not clear why a Phoenix helicopter pilot decided to trace the name Alex with their flight path that night. What is clear is that the helicopter did it after midnight while hovering only 2,000 feet above a West Phoenix neighborhood. Phoenix police did not share the pilot's name, but told New Times a few days later that the incident was referred to the department's Professional Standards Bureau. It's unclear when that review will be complete. Buckeye woman says unknown body is squatting in her grave. When the time came, Nancy Marshall was to be buried alongside her late husband and her late mother. She's already reserved a specific plot next to their graves at Buckeye's Lewis B. Hazleton Memorial Cemetery. Then, last year, she got a phone call. The cemetery informed her that there was an unidentified body already buried in her plot. The cemetery had looked through its nearly 90 years of records, but could not figure out who it was. Would Marshall like a different plot? Would she like her husband and her mother disinterred and buried elsewhere? Marshall decided to sue the cemetery instead. After New Times reported on the story, the two sides appeared to reach an amicable solution. The cemetery asked a Maricopa County Superior Court judge to grant them authority to disinter and rebury the unknown corpse. Marshall said that was fine with her, but earlier this month, the court denied that request in a ruling. The body remains. Avondale City Council member accused of kidnapping. Earlier this year, MAGA devotee and Avondale City Council member Jeanette Garcia made headlines by accusing Tom Hanks of being a pedo, though she attempted to walk it back in the face of widespread condemnation. What goes around comes around, it seems, because in November, Garcia was accused of her own non-sexual misdeeds with a child. In an anonymous lawsuit, a father who worked with Garcia at Turning Point USA said Garcia drunkenly propositioned him last year as they celebrated Republican election wins. When he declined, he claims, Garcia conspired to abduct his teen daughter from their house under the guise of being concerned for her. Per the lawsuit, the daughter was not returned to him until the next day. Garcia forcefully denied the lawsuit's allegations on social media, but has not responded in court. There's a chance this story winds up as one of the craziest of 2026, too. Remember that if you miss any of the stories in this program or any other Sun Sounds program, you can listen to them on demand. Just go to sunsounds.org and click on Broadcast Info and Audio. Then click on Demand Podcasts. Scroll down to the program you're interested in and click on Listen. Next, the cover story from this week's print edition of the New Times. The Departed, Remembering Phoenix Figures Who Died in 2025. Written by members of the Phoenix New Times staff, this story was posted on January 1st. In Arizona, 2025 may be remembered as the year of two momentous deaths in particular. March brought the death at 77 of Raul Grijalva, the longtime Tucson congressman and progressive stalwart. And in September, an assassin's bullet cut down 31-year-old conservative firebrand Charlie Kirk, who'd built a Phoenix-based political influence machine with national reach. But Grijalva and Kirk were far from the only notable Arizonans who died last year. The Valley lost beloved restaurateurs, impactful music figures, and longtime staples of the local arts scene. It bid farewell to familiar TV news faces and a Pulitzer-winning cartoonist. It's also the year that the state began executing prisoners again, putting two convicted murderers to death. Here, in chronological order of their passing, are some of the most notable figures who died in 2025. Robert X. Planet, January 5th. Any history of Phoenix's rich 80s punk music scene isn't complete without discussing Robert X. Planet and his band, Killer Pussy, which played a kitschy mix of new wave and punk that was funny, bawdy, and unique. The band's singer, Lucy LaMode, told Phoenix New Times the two were joined at the hip since they met in the late 70s. The Killer Pussy song, Teenage Enema Nurse in Bondage, has become a classic track beyond Arizona's borders. Planet was also known for his humorous and irreverent takes on culture throughout the 80s and 90s. He let his giant creative flag fly with robot creations, fashion designs, and building sets for plays. More recently, he and Roxanne De Winter graced the seminal downtown art space, the Alwyn House, with stage readings of Edgar Allan Poe's works each Halloween. Planet died in his sleep in January. He was 74. Written by Amy Young. Raul Grijalva, March 13th. Perhaps the most legendary progressive Democrat in Arizona's recent political memory, Grijalva was born 30 miles south of Tucson in 1948, the son of a Mexican guest worker in the country under the Bracero program. After decades of holding local political office, Grijalva was elected to Congress in 2002, occupying the seat until his death from lung cancer in March. A champion of Latino and Chicano culture, as well as American multiculturalism, Grijalva was known throughout his political career as a staunch advocate for bilingual education, tribal sovereignty, and environmental justice. His interest in and knowledge of conservation earned him a 10-year role as the top Democrat on the House Natural Resources Committee. Grijalva's personable approach made him widely liked on both sides of the aisle, even if his stances were largely left of center. Arizona lost a friend today, GOP Representative Andy Biggs wrote after Grijalva's death, calling him a dedicated public servant who served his constituents well. Democratic Senator Ruben Gallegos said Grijalva spent his life as a voice for equality. Grijalva was an activist before he was a politician, coming up with the Chicano nationalist Raza Unida Party. He lost his first local election in 1972, but came back 2 years later with a more polished style to win a seat on the governing board of the Tucson Unified School District. He also sat on the Pima County Board of Supervisors from 1989 until 2002 in his congressional run. It's the same body that his daughter, Adelita Grijalva, served on before winning a special election to fill her father's seat this summer. She won the seat at 54 years of age, the same age her father was when he was first elected to Congress. Written by T.J. LeHeru. Aaron Gunches and Richard Durf, March 19th and October 19th. In 2025, Arizona fired up the engine on an execution machine that, after a series of botched killings, had lain dormant for 2 years. Gunches and Durf were the first two prisoners fed into its maw. Aaron Gunches was the first to be executed, dying by lethal injection in March. In 2002, Gunches murdered Ted Price, the ex-husband of Gunches' then-girlfriend. Gunches shot Price 3 times in the chest and once in the back of the head in the Arizona desert before dumping his body. He was sentenced to death in 2008 and then again in 2013 after the Arizona Supreme Court found an error in his first death penalty trial. Gunches defended himself in those proceedings and did not fight his own execution. 7 months after Gunch's death, the state killed Durf. In 1993, a 23-year-old Durf sadistically murdered the entire family of his co-worker, Albert Luna Jr. Durf held the family hostage in their West Phoenix home before killing them all, including Luna's 5-year-old brother and 18-year-old sister, the latter of whom Durf also raped. He then doused the home in gasoline and drove off in Luna's mother's car. Gunches spent 17 years on death row, while Durf awaited execution for 30. Despite controversy over Arizona's execution methods, both men's lethal injection deaths appeared to go smoothly, according to media witnesses. Neither offered any final words before the state executioners inserted IVs into their arms and pumped the deadly phenobarbital into their veins. Gunches was 53, and Durf was 55. Written by Morgan Fisher. Angel Diaz, April 30th. Angel Diaz made Phoenix more colorful. The tattoo artist and muralist's bold work, often inspired by Mexican culture and the Sonoran Desert, graces many a client and wall around the valley. His other gifts to the city were intangible, the support he gave to other artists and the love he had for his community. But their impact was on display 10 days after his death at 45, when friends, family, and fans filled a Phoenix art space to celebrate his life and raise money for his family. A GoFundMe page encapsulated Diaz's legacy. Angel Diaz was more than an artist, it reads. He was a storyteller, a mentor, and a visionary. His murals brightened city walls, his tattoos carried deep meaning for those who wore them, and his crafts were treasures to everyone who held them. Though he may be gone, his art lives on. Sadly, not all of his work remains. His Super Mario Brothers Nintendo-themed mural on the building at the corner of Van Buren and 16th Streets was painted over in August when a car dealership bought the building. Its loss is even more deeply felt with the loss of its creator. Written by Jennifer Goldberg. Indu the Elephant and Fernando the Sloth, May 8th and November 4th. In the bleakest days of the pandemic, when we all searched for something, anything, to lighten the collective mood, the Phoenix Zoo put Fernando, it's Linnaeus's two-toed sloth, on Cameo, the website that offers personalized videos from celebrities big and small and non-human. When a cheery zookeeper read a message off-screen, Fernando would gaze placidly at the camera or perhaps munch on a leaf. Fernando was diagnosed with heart problems in 2024, and in November, after experiencing difficulty breathing, he died at a veterinary hospital at 9 years old. He wasn't the only great loss at the zoo this year. In May, Indu, an Asian elephant who had lived at the zoo since 1998, was humanely euthanized at the age of 59. She had been receiving care for chronic osteoarthritis and age-related illness. Heather Wright, elephant collection manager, said in a statement that Indu has made and continues to leave an indelible impression on all who have had the privilege to care for her and the guests who have had the joy of seeing her. Written by Jennifer Goldberg. Trig Kaiser, May 18th. It's an odd thing to know a child through social media. Trig Kaiser, the son of Chandler content creator Emily and her husband Brady, grew up on Instagram and TikTok. Emily Kaiser's millions of followers saw Trig's birth announcement, his first Christmas, his breakfasts, and the news that he was going to be a big brother. And so his death in May brought international attention to a problem Phoenix just can't seem to shake, the dangers of swimming pools. The 3-year-old boy with the sandy blonde hair and big smile fell into an unfenced pool in his backyard the day after Mother's Day. He passed away 6 days later at the hospital. After an understandably long break from social media, his mother posted, "The light and spirit he brought into this world was bright, pure, joyful, and undeniable. We miss him every second of every day." His tragic death set off a storm of news coverage. Chandler police investigated, ultimately recommending a felony charge against the boy's father, who, the police report says, was watching a basketball game while he lost track of Trig in the backyard. Maricopa County Attorney Rachel Mitchell declined to prosecute, citing no reasonable likelihood of conviction. Though Trig's death sparked headlines across the world, he is just one of the children who drowned in a Phoenix pool this year. May the tragedy of his loss remind us of the dangers of swimming pools and that young lives are precious, fragile, and worth protecting. Written by Jennifer Goldberg. Adam Ramey, May 19th. Ramey was the founding member and vocalist of Dropout Kings, a rap metal band he started in Phoenix after his prior band, The Bad Chapter, broke up. Within a couple of years of forming in 2016, the Dropout Kings gained an active fan base, signing with a record label and heading out on tour with bigger acts. By 2021, the new metal band was on the Billboard charts and the band was headlining its own tour. Even as he made it big, Ramey was passionate about helping other artists. In 2020, he started Push Digital Marketing to help bands grow and get exposure. Ramey died by suicide in May at 31. On the day his death was announced, his sister-in-law created a GoFundMe page and shared that his death came after a long and painful battle with addiction. The Dropout Kings paid tribute to their late member in a record released this year, Yo-Kai, and with a live-streamed Adam Ramey Memorial Concert to celebrate his life. His legacy also lives on through his wife, Jamie, and son, Jude. Written by Amy Young. Dennis Gilman, June 8th. At a memorial gathering for Gilman, one speaker compared his tireless efforts to document the nativist ugliness that swept Arizona in the 2010s to the actions of the San Patricio Battalion. The battalion was made up of U.S. Army deserters who fought for Mexico during the Mexican-American War and were punished with execution after Mexico lost. Gilman would have loved the comparison. An accomplished musician and an alarm technician by trade, Gilman poured his time, money, and considerable talent into documenting racism and injustice on his YouTube page, Human League 002. He filmed Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio's anti-immigration raids, dogged the heels of bigoted politicians such as Arizona Senate President Russell Pierce, and made a record of members of the anti-immigrant crowd at protests against Arizona's immigration law, Senate Bill 1070. Gilman, who died at 67 of natural causes, was unflinching and unafraid, driven by an inner morality that despised bullies and oppression. More than once, he was attacked by nativists and neo-Nazis who could not stand the way that he was portraying them in his videos. But all Gilman did was hold up a mirror to them, allowing them to damn themselves with their ill words and deeds. Gilman was a citizen journalist and not a professional one, but he could teach the latter a thing or two. A few years ago, he retired and bought a home in Miami, Arizona, devoting much of his time to music. With a new, more powerful nativism on the march, Gilman and his camera are much missed. Thankfully, as can be seen in videos of federal immigration cops on TikTok and X, others have taken up the fight. Written by Stephen Lemons. Diana Callas, June 24th. Today, female TV newscasters are staples of television screens in Phoenix. But until 1970, there had been none on local TV news. That year, Diane Callas became the first. Born in 1932 in Kansas City, Callas moved to Phoenix with her family in 1947 and graduated from Phoenix Union High School before attending Phoenix College. She didn't study journalism, but always knew she wanted to be a reporter. Callas was 38 when she started as the first woman in Channel 12's newsroom, serving as a producer and co-anchor for the show Today in Arizona. She told 12 News in 2024 that her male colleagues treated me like their little sister and were helpful and welcoming. With the station, she covered the 1972 Supreme Court decision in Roe v. Wade and interviewed Hollywood legends like Bob Hope, Sammy Davis Jr., and Phyllis Diller. She even did a story about a gorilla being transported to the Phoenix Zoo in Hugh Hefner's plane. Channel 12 let her go after 7 years at the station. Callas then jumped to radio at KTAR, going on to work at radio stations across the country, including in Pittsburgh, Boston, and San Francisco. She finished her career in public relations for Shell Oil Company in California before retiring in 1994 and moving to Flagstaff. Callas suffered a broken hip in March and suffered from health challenges as a result. She died in Peoria months later, peacefully surrounded by love, her family wrote in a Facebook post. She was 93. Written by Morgan Fisher. Nancy Jackson, June 25th. A vocalist, Jackson came to the Valley in the mid-1970s to study music. She immersed herself in the music community, performing with big band ensembles and area jazz musicians. Jackson was renowned for her vocal range and ability to transition seamlessly between diverse styles, including jazz and pop. Often playing alongside Jackson was her husband, bassist Jim Simmons. The pair's popularity took off during their 11-year stint as the co-owners of the iconic Tempe club, Chuy's. The place was a hopping hotspot for blues and jazz music, welcoming legendary touring artists to its stage. The likes of Charlie Musselwhite and Jaco Pastorius played there. Locals like Bob Corritore, who owns the Rhythm Room, and singer-songwriter Walt Richardson were also fixtures of the place. At the time of her death at 69, Jackson had relocated to North Carolina. Her memory lives on through peers and friends like Corritore, who have cited her presence and venue for helping blues and jazz music continue to find audiences in the Valley. Written by Amy Young. Steve Benson, July 8th. Like any good political cartoonist, Steve Benson knew how to ruffle feathers. And Benson, who died at 71 due to complications from a 2024 stroke, was a great political cartoonist. Born in Sacramento and raised in a devoutly Mormon family, his grandfather was president of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Benson abandoned a possible career in the LDS Church for a career skewering the powerful with pen and ink, spending most of his cartooning life at the Arizona Republic, though after he was let go by the Republic in 2019, his work also appeared in New Times and the Arizona Mirror. Benson won a Pulitzer Prize in 1993 and was a finalist on four other occasions. He wasn't afraid of going after the powerful. Barry Goldwater once famously took offense at a Benson cartoon. In the late 1980s, Benson hammered Arizona Governor Evan Mecham, a fellow Mormon who lasted less than 2 years in office before he was impeached, even worse. Those cartoons widened a rift between Benson and the LDS Church, which he eventually left. He spent the rest of his career as an avowed atheist and liberal. Benson's cartoons sometimes offended more than just career politicians and the LDS Church. In particular, a 1997 anti-death penalty cartoon, which tweaked a famous image of a firefighter carrying the bloodied body of a child killed in the Oklahoma City bombing. It angered firefighters and also the child's mother. But Benson never backed down or apologized for it, saying his cartoons are meant to provoke. "I don't aim to please," he liked to say. "I just aim." Written by Zach Buchanan. Lori Hassler, July 22nd. Lori Hassler left an outsized impact on the Valley through her food, friends, and family. The Phoenix chef owned the Farish House, a charming French bistro located in a historic brick house downtown. There, she served carefully crafted dishes that were both elegant and comforting. Hassler grew up in Tempe, graduated from Arizona State University, and traveled throughout Europe studying food and wine. She opened the Scottsdale restaurant Rada Cafe Bar in 2003, later working as a wine representative and personal chef. She opened the Farish House in 2018. In 2020, Hassler was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, which she fought for the next 5 years until her death at 54. Her friends remember the chef and mother as kind, strong, and a badass leader. Hassler is survived by her husband of 25 years, their daughter, and her beloved downtown Phoenix restaurant, which continues her legacy of warm hospitality and thoughtfully crafted food. Written by Terrine Bone. Alfredo Gutierrez, July 28th. Gutierrez was a Phoenix legend. He was a civil rights activist, co-founded a hugely influential nonprofit, and rose to a position of leadership in the Democratic Party as a state legislator. He did all that before age 30, even though in his later years, he was known as a vocal opponent of one of Arizona's most infamous discrimination laws. Growing up in Miami, Arizona, Gutierrez admitted to having a juvenile police record and was a guest of county facilities on a number of occasions, chalking it up to a lack of anything to do. I was from a tough family. It was a tough place, Gutierrez told New Times in 1991. I survived. What else can I say? He served in the Vietnam War and later worked in the mines of his hometown, coming to Phoenix only when a mining strike stalled his work. He was eligible for the GI Bill, so he split and went to Arizona State University before being pushed out over his campus activism. He then helped Cesar Chavez organize farm workers and worked on Robert F. Kennedy's ill-fated 1968 presidential campaign. In 1969, Gutierrez founded Chicanos por la Causa, which remains one of the largest Latino-focused community development organizations in the country. Gutierrez then turned to politics, winning an Arizona Senate seat in 1972 as a Democrat. 2 years later, he was tabbed the Senate Majority Leader. He spent 14 years in the Arizona legislature. Decades after leaving the legislature, Gutierrez became a foremost activist against the controversial Senate Bill 1070, even getting arrested as a result. That activist streak never quite left him. Just before his July death from esophageal cancer at 79, Gutierrez was spotted mixing it up with a counter-protester at an anti-Trump demonstration. Written by T.J. LeHoux. Frank Camacho, August 29th. Born in Levine, where his father worked as a cotton farmer, Frank Camacho grew to become a television pioneer and one of the most recognizable faces on local television. He died in August at 75. After starting his career in radio, first at KRUX and then at KTAR, Camacho transitioned to television, spending 3 decades as a news anchor for Arizona's family. He was one of the first Mexican-American news anchors in Arizona. For more than 30 years, Camacho was beamed into the homes of Valley residents. He interviewed every president from Gerald Ford to Barack Obama, and was on the air to announce the end of the 2004 Lewis prison standoff, which was the longest in U.S. history. He retired in 2012, later serving as the communications director for the Arizona Democratic Party. But he was a newsman through and through. Once you're in the news business, once you're a journalist, he told the Arizona Republic in 2019, I guess you always are. Written by Zach Buchanan. Bob Corbin, September 9th. Bob Corbin's demise at the age of 96 brought on a flood of panegyrics to rival Noah's. Corbin, who served 3 terms as Arizona Attorney General from 1979 to 1991, was hailed as an old-school Western icon. His hundreds of forays into the Superstition Mountains to hunt for the lost Dutchman mine were part of the Republican hardliners' throwback appeal. Other indicators of alleged greatness pale upon examination. Take Corbin's prosecution of 3 men who were believed to have been involved in the 1976 assassination of Arizona Republic reporter Don Bowles. Corbin milked the case for attention without going after Arizona rancher racketeer Kemper Marley, the criminal kingpin believed to have set the car bombing in motion. Corbin earned praise for his 1988 indictment of Governor Evan Mecham on violations of campaign finance laws. But Mecham beat the rap and had already been impeached, convicted, and removed from office by the state legislature. When Mecham rescinded the establishment of a Martin Luther King Jr. Day in Arizona, Corbin had paved the way by issuing an opinion that Mecham's predecessor lacked the authority to establish the holiday. Corbin also sleazily took $50,000 in campaign donations from notorious savings and loan swindler Charles Keating Jr. and his associates. After leaving office, Corbin served as president of the National Rifle Association, campaigning against the so-called Brady Bill, which made a federal background check a requirement for gun purchasers. Legendary? Don't think so. Written by Stephen Lemons. Charlie Kirk, September 10th. Charlie Kirk was a 31-year-old Phoenix podcaster and YouTuber who rose to mega stardom by barking conservative talking points at undergrads. But most normies didn't know his name before a sniper killed him as he spoke at a college campus in Utah. Millions of people Googled Kirk. His Wikipedia page was the most viewed English language article on that site in 2025, and they did not like what they saw. Far from elevating public discourse, his life's work made the United States a crueler, more dangerous place. His barbaric killing only underscored that terrible fact. Written by Sam Eifling. Betsy Mekwan Toyi, October 18th. Betsy Mekwan Toyi served as the charismatic matriarch of the casual downtown Japanese restaurant Bluefin for nearly 30 years. She was 91 years old. The Phoenix native studied at Arizona State University and Columbia University, then worked in education as a high school counselor. She traveled the world. Yi and her husband Howard raised 5 children and opened Ye Olde Pharmacy and Ye Olde Trader. She also made savvy investments in real estate. That included the building housing Bluefin. When the Japanese restaurant's owner had to move, Yi took over the eatery rather than find a new tenant. She just had all of this energy, and she needed to channel it somewhere, her daughter Lin Yi said. Betsy Yi and her staff built a loyal following of lunchtime regulars that included politicos, journalists, and educators working at downtown schools. Yi was known for stopping at tables to chat and top off drinks. Notably, Yi successfully organized to save the restaurant from an eminent domain claim. Her willingness to push back, not roll over, was a critical lesson for her daughter. Written by Sarah Crocker. Marilyn Zeitlin, November 10th. When Marilyn Zeitlin passed away in November at 84, the tributes about the longtime Phoenix arts community figure began to pour in. From the Arizona State University Art Museum, where she was director and chief curator for years. During her 15-year tenure, she brought forward innovative exhibitions and opened doors for emerging artists at pivotal moments in their careers. Her commitment to artist-centered practice continues to resonate throughout the museum. In layman's terms, Zeitlin traveled to El Salvador to meet with artists whose work depicted the country's civil war and organized the first trip of U.S. university students to post-revolutionary Cuba. She was the U.S. commissioner for the 1995 Venice Biennial, an important international cultural exhibition. She mentored and encouraged artists and arts professionals, and she markedly raised the profile and reputation of the ASU Art Museum as a vital Southwest cultural institution. Her legacy echoes through its halls. Written by Jennifer Goldberg. Kevin Daley, November 26th. Kevin Daley was a pivotal figure in Phoenix's music scene. Although he was originally from Virginia, he lived and played punk and rockabilly music in Arizona for more than 4 decades, with bands such as Hellfire, Grave Danger, and Kevin Daley Chicken and Waffles. Daley had a passion for wheels and was as much a gearhead as he was a ridiculously good guitar player and engaging frontman. He rode Harleys, had vintage vehicles, and belonged to the Midnighters Car Club, where his auto geekery was matched by that of its members, many of whom became dear friends. He was known for his thoughtful nature and for treating everyone with respect, making people feel seen and heard. His sense of humor was legendary, along with the wicked grin that paralleled his witty quips. His legacy lives on in recordings and videos of his music and performances, along with the trove of photos and published memories loved ones have shared. After battling brain cancer for the last couple of years, Daley died on Thanksgiving Eve at 69. His death inspired an outpouring of messages and memories on social media from people whose lives he touched, not just in the music arena, but from various walks of life. Written by Amy Young. David Hendershot, December 14th. Speak no ill of the dead, you say? In the case of David Hendershot, who died of cancer at age 69, that is simply not possible. In the words of Shakespeare's Richard III, Hendershot was quite willing to prove a villain in public life. As the powerful chief deputy of Sheriff Joe Arpaio, Hendershot gleefully carried out Arpaio's authoritarian agenda. He helped ruin the careers of sheriff's office employees who spoke out against Arpaio or surreptitiously dropped a dime to the media. He also ordered the wrongful arrests of New Times owners, repeatedly threatened an Arizona Republic reporter with the arrest and removal of her child, smeared Arpaio's political opponents with false allegations and orchestrated fake assassination plots against Arpaio, which, in one case, railroaded an innocent man as the scapegoat. Cataloging each of his heinous acts as Arpaio's top henchman would require its own wiki. Perhaps the most egregious involved Hendershot's leadership of the Maricopa anti-corruption effort, part of a sinister plot to force the county government into receivership. Mace targeted county supervisors, superior court judges, and regular county employees with criminal investigation, indictment, and sometimes arrest. The cases all collapsed, and the targeted individuals sued, scoring over $44 million in settlements. In 2011, Hendershot resigned to avoid being fired. Maybe Hendershot's family loved him, but he'll always be remembered as Arpaio's top toady, his ogre, his slimy Jabba the Hutt. Good riddance. Written by Stephen Lemons. And that brings us to the end of this week's program. Thanks very much for listening to Stories from the Phoenix New Times. Please stay tuned for other interesting programs. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer, Chip Hawbrook.